on today's show.
There is a miraculous component to the way God works in finances. I mean, I think we should not be so, you know, glib to ignore just the normal means that God uses to provide, but also there's an aspect that God delights in making, in giving us what we need to be able to give, you know, not what we need in order to be extremely like well off. And he challenges the Corinthians to give generously, fulfill their commitment to give generously, despite, you know, what they may felt was they couldn't do. Let's not get all worried that we're not going to be able to meet our missionary commitments, because God will give us what we need to meet the commitments he wants us to meet.
Stay tuned. Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined once more by Scott Dunford, pastor of Western Hills Church in San Mateo, California. By the way, it's been a little while since we've recorded, and it's good to be back, buddy. And it's good to have you back as well, wherever you're listening from or watching from. If you're watching on video on our YouTube channel, there's so many perks available for you. We want you to know, as a Missions Podcast premium subscriber, and we are still every episode concluding our time with a bonus recording that we do just for those premium ministry partners. If you want to get in on that and hear today's overtime episode on Christian optimism and Christian pessimism, you can do that at missionspodcast.com/premium. Get your membership set up. Also, just a little heads up to our Apple subscribers. We're working on setting up an Apple subscription as well in the Apple Podcast app so that you don't have to go to our website to get that sorted out. But I'll just let you know there's more benefits at missionspodcast.com if you go there. And we're so grateful to each and every one of you who've done that, as well as those of you who've taken the time to leave us a 5-star rating and review. If you haven't done that yet, we would appreciate that so greatly. And Scott, the Lord has used every single person that's listening to this and sharing it with friends for years. We are at 7 years of doing this show this month. Got back from the For the Church conference in Kansas City, and that was the conference out of which this was born. It was born on the back from For the Church 2017. That's your cue to say something witty. Professionals.
That's awesome. No, that is what you know what actually happened? My connection went out right where you were saying that, and I only was hearing like every other word. So I totally missed the cue. But you know, 7 years of broadcasting excellence. I think that's what we should say.
Brian should leave all of that in. And listen, hopefully it's not, you know, 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of, you know, the blighted cows eating the fat cows. And let's just hope that the 7 years to come, Scott, are better than the ones that have gone before. And so maybe without that, actually, that's a perfect segue, unplanned as it is, for our topic today. You know, there is a ton of anxiety in the broader society right now, especially in the U.S., for good reason. It's been a crazy last several years. And our friend of the show, guest on the show and friend of mine, David Schrock, pastor and also editor with Christ Overall, he wrote to us this question. He says, we're going to interact with this throughout the show. This is going to actually form the basis of our entire conversation, because there's a ton to get into here, Scott. So I want to get your initial reaction to that. And really, I want to take this conversation in two chunks. But before we get into all that, here's his question. He asks this. He says he's been reading Aaron McIntyre's latest book, so The Total State. And he says, with the seeming collapse of America's affluence, what does that mean for missions? Do we need to prepare to change our expectations? Okay, so that's the first question. What does America's decline? And we could argue how much America is truly declining, but what does that mean for missions? Number two, and do Christians and churches have a category for thinking about missions when they don't have the resources to send as they did in the 1950s up through the 2000s? Does the command remain, he explains, does the command remain as in 2 Corinthians that they gave out of their poverty? Or does it also include a a sad realization that we can't give or send like we once did. And part of that is because we failed, perhaps, to build communities at home. He says, have you guys thought about this or discussed this? So, Dave, thanks for an incredible, thought-provoking question. Honestly, that's one of the best podcast listener questions we've gotten in a while. So really grateful for that. Scott, what do you think if we take these in reverse order? I kind of want to talk about just individual missionary support, you know, giving out of poverty, that question from 2 Corinthians there, and go from that into these broader questions of, you know, sort of the American empire, perhaps sunsetting in some way. That's the way it feels, at least, and we can discuss the implications of that later. But maybe, Scott, what are your initial readings on the second half of that question?
Yeah, I think it gets into, you know, a bit of the first part of the question, which is just the way Americans tend to view America. We're not the only game in town. And I think as Americans, we tend to forget that. You know, we tend to view like the world through a very American centric lens and North American centric lens. It's just not the reality. And I think a passage like 2 Corinthians 8 brings that right back to us, right? Like the Great Commission started amongst poor people in Palestine, and God used those poor Galilean fishermen for the most part to spread the gospel and preach to positions of power all around the world, you know, and then he uses poor Christians in Corinth who were going through their own theological messes and a church that wasn't particularly healthy. In fact, it probably would have kicked them out of all of our associations and denominations. And yet God was using them in their, you know, repentance and then they're trying to follow God to support Paul in many different situations. And so I think that's a great reminder for us that God's kingdom advances and God's timing and in God's resources. We're stewards of the resources that we have and we ought to be good stewards of them. But you know, the song "He Owns a Cattle on a Thousand Hills" is still true. You know, the resources are the Lord's, and so I don't think that, you know, the economic situation of America changes the need of your Great Commission, nor does it change the command for us to be generous. But it definitely will change what generosity looks like.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because yeah, I would hope nobody's doubting the theology of the Lord provides, and He certainly provides for the work of mission. I do want to read the passage from 2 Corinthians because I think that'll ground the discussion a little bit. So let me do that and then maybe ask a deeper question and get your reaction, Scott. So 2 Corinthians 8, I'll read the first 5 verses. Paul says, "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty," the ESV translates it, "have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us." So not only are they giving out of their extreme poverty, these believers in Macedonia, they gave beyond their means, and they're actually begging Paul and his company for the privilege of participating and bringing relief to the saints at Jerusalem. Now, I think important context here too. Paul is sharing this not necessarily to say every single church is going to look like this for all of church history. Yeah. He's specifically rebuking the Corinthians who had promised something and had failed to take up the offering. which you know, as far as you know, fun ways for pastors to preach on generosity, that's a great way of sort of making the indirect ask. He's like, "Well, all right, well, let me tell you what this church down the street from you is doing as far as giving to missions." I mean, that's sort of what's going on there, you know. But Scott, to just kind of bring this home, yeah, we know the theology of it, but to press the point further, my paycheck is worth 5 digits less than it was 4 years ago. Because that 80% of the money that's been printed since 2020 80% of the money that exists now in circulation has been printed since 2020, which is astounding. The way that inflation affects all of us. And I just got a phone call today. We've got a significant exterminator bill that's coming due soon. We've got a colony of mice that has been living with us for a very, very long time. So help us think through then. Okay, we know that the Lord owns the cattle on a thousand hills. We have the biblical example of the widow and her two mites. But at the same time, I'm not called to behave recklessly or foolishly. I of course have to feed my family. So what does the theology of giving and generosity look like? I mean, is the listener to this show, are they allowed to say, yeah, for this season we have to scale back our giving? I mean, how do we even think through that without, you know, immediately feeling guilty?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I need to apologize to the listeners. I kind of was butchered my exegesis of that first point by saying that the Corinthians were giving out of their poverty when it was the Macedonians. So thanks for correcting that. But I do think that the second part in 2 Corinthians 9 is so important. You know, one, he calls on the Corinthian church to finish the gift that they had committed to giving. But he also gives us this principle to remind ourselves: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and who sows generously will also reap generously. I think that's been misused to be like, "Hey, you know, you plant your seed money, and God's going to give you more money." I don't think that's exactly what he's saying here. Although there is a principle here that I think we should pay attention to, because he goes on to say, "Each of you should give what you have decided in your own heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." Mm. And God is able to bless you abundantly, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. And I think that's just such a good reminder for us that there is a miraculous component to the way God works in finances. I mean, I think we should not be so, you know, glib to ignore just the normal means that God uses to provide. But also there's an aspect mm-hmm. that God delights in giving us what we need to be able to give, you know, not what we need in order to be extremely like well off, but what we need in order to give. And he challenges the Corinthians to give generously, fulfill their commitment to give generously, despite, you know, what they may felt was they couldn't do, and that God would provide what they needed to continue to give. So I think there's that principle. I think we just need to remind ourselves of that. Like, let's not get all worried that we're not going to be able to meet our missionary commitments, because God will give us what we need to meet the commitments he wants us to meet. Right. Mm. That was kind of a Jesus juke, but I think it's an important reminder for us. But
it is an important reminder.
But let's just assume for a second that things are as bad as people feel like they are, and things do get worse, and that Larry Burkett's coming economic earthquake, which he predicted in 1991, finally comes true, which, you know, it's only been a few years. Let's say it comes to fruition and things do collapse. Does that mean the work that work ends, or does it mean it changes? And I think it can mean that it changes. I was just talking about this the other day, you know, with someone in my church. You know, when we're paying pastors, like if the church is affluent, they should. The principle that Paul says is that they should give, you know, out of the proceeds that they've been given. You know, they should take care of their pastors and church leaders according to the generosity, according to the abundance that they have. But if a church is poor and has a poor, you know, poor congregation and people are scrappy, I mean, should they make sure the pastor is living high in the hog while they are starving to death? I don't think so. So I do think that there could have to be a recalibration, even in the way we think about missions and the kind of funding that we have, which is ideal. Right now, I think we're kind of looking at an ideal funding situation, and we might have to change that to say, hey, you know, we're going to need a lot more tent makers, if that's even possible in situations.
There's a few things that I want to unpack. First, it does bring up this idea of just contentment in general. And so many of us even though we have so many things, fail to be content. And if you're watching, actually, right in front of me on my desk right now, I am holding a copy of this little volume by the Puritan Jeremiah Burroughs. This is taken from actually a long appendix to his work, The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment, which is just a phenomenal read. But this particular volume here from the Puritan Treasures for Today series is Contentment, Prosperity, and God's Glory. And frankly, I think I need to read this after after we finish this conversation, because it's completely right on the point here. I mean, just this quote on the back, you know, from Philippians, remembering that Paul says, I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content, right? He knows to be abased and he knows how to abound. Anyway, if you've ever tried to tackle some of the Puritans, including Burroughs, this whole Puritan Treasures for Today series might be a great place to start. It takes the Puritans, it puts them into a form that's understandable for modern readers. And as a way of celebrating our partnership on the Missions Podcast with ABWE and with Reformation Heritage Books, the publisher of this series, RHB is providing a special discount code, and we extend our gratitude to them for their support as well. You can learn more at heritagebooks.org/Puritan Treasures and use the code MissionsPod to get a discount if you order. Again, heritagebooks.org/Puritan Treasures. There's an entire series of 15 Puritan works here, and if you order, use the promo code MissionsPod, no spaces, all caps, to get a discount on that order. So special thanks to Reformation Heritage Books for partnering with us here on the show. Beyond that point of contentment as well, though, you know, one of the things that we go back to, okay, is this story of the widow and her two mites that we have in the Gospels. And yeah, this picture out of a woman literally giving out of abject poverty. And I think one conclusion we can reach from that is the Lord applauds joyful sacrificial giving. The Lord applauds a cheerful giver and one who's doing that at great sacrifice to themselves. One of the other points of that passage, though, is that comes right after Jesus condemns the Pharisees for seizing women's houses and widows' homes and their means. And it's showing how corrupt the religious leadership class is at that point. And so I do think there is a knife's edge balance here where religious leaders also have to be careful that in the name of sort of, you know, pious, sacrificial, let's be radical, let's be generous, that religious leaders aren't laying burdens on impoverished congregants to say, no, you must give to the point of self-abasement, when that's really between them and the Lord. And you see that sort of kind of predatory behavior from preachers on television and others. And I think that's a cautionary point where, yeah, there's an example of this in Scripture, but also it's not your job to decide that someone else has to give at that level of sacrifice. I think another important thing that you bring up, Scott, is we do give according to our means. The Macedonian believers, they gave beyond their means, but we are called, for instance, heads of household, men are called by Paul that if you don't provide for the members of your household, you're worse than an unbeliever, right? There is this order of loves. There are these concentric circles of moral proximity and duty that we have to resolve first. I have to put on my own oxygen mask before I can put on my passenger beside me, their oxygen mask. And then I have to care for my household, my family, you know, my neighbors and my church. And then, yeah, let's also talk about the ends of the earth and the missionaries that our church supports. I think I've used this example on the show before, though. I knew of a church that refused to hire a pastor because they only wanted to pay him what was the equivalent of probably what you would make now working 10 hours a week. They wouldn't pay him a full-time salary because they wanted to give two or three times that amount to missions. And so as a result of not having leadership, they ended up being a church of 30 or so people who were frankly dying off and didn't have a shepherd. I mean, that's what happens when you're more focused on the outer circles of moral proximity, but you're not focused on also building your own house and community first in order for your generosity to be the overflow of that. I do think that's one thing that David is getting at in his question is the fact that we do have to build up our capacity to give. We can't just, you know, spend ourselves all at once. We have to be resilient enough and smart enough about investing, about working hard, about saving, so that we can be more generous in the long haul and not just short-term generosity that kind of burns itself out in a blaze of glory. Scott, I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, you know, you can argue things like Dave Ramsey principles here, right? But and I'm not a Dave Ramsey purist. I'm really not. But one thing, you know, that he's promoted in years past that I appreciate is this idea of, you know, being disciplined now so that you can be more generous later. The goal of building up one's own household and wealth and career and finance is so that you can be more generous. And maybe it's just me as a millennial. There was sort of this stream of radical thinking that had a lot of people thinking, okay, sacrifice is the only lens that we have for the Christian approach to finances. And well, that's a part of it, but actually you have to have something in order to sacrifice it first as well. I mean, how do you think through that? You've been a missionary. You've been on the business side of things. You got your MBA. I mean, you're looking at this from multiple lenses. How would you help our listeners filter through those things, Scott?
I am a little concerned about some of the fear that's driving some people's thinking. And I think we need to make sure that we're not acting out of fear, first of all. That's not of the Lord. Second, I think you're right. I think typically God uses normal means, and normal means could be things like working hard, saving, planning, right? Like that's really important and good. And I think planning in your generosity that, you know, we plan on, hey, how do we plan to take care of our local church? How do we plan to take care of our children? How do we plan to take care of, you know, the desire to see the gospel go to the ends of the world? I think those things, we plan those things. But I think there's also an aspect of that I don't want us to lose in that. And that is we need to be also listening for God directing in unusual ways. And, you know, we see, you know, in the book of Acts, you know, where Barnabas is moved to do something very unusual, you know, like, you know, he had this property and he sold it, all of it. And because it was a pressing need, and the need was that there was all of these influx of outside, people coming into Jerusalem who now were Christians and had incredible, extraordinary needs. And he didn't look at them and say, it doesn't fit into my budget, or, you know, I've got to do X, Y, or Z first. God led him in that unique situation to sell everything, all of that property, and give all of that money to that need. But he didn't lead everyone to do it that way. In fact, when Ananias and Sapphira said they did the same thing, God struck them dead for their deceitfulness. And so, you know, I think that we have an example then of Barnabas where, you know, there was a unique need, a special need. God had put him in a unique position, but God was also doing something special in Barnabas's life and then really preparing him to go. And so he was in a unique position to listen to God's spirit in that moment and do something extraordinary. And so I think that we need to allow ourselves to have that, you know, all of those components. And some of us are more prone to, you know, living by the seat of our pants. You know, I mean, I know my wife and I, when we were young, I mean, it was like, oh, we got $3,000, you know, like given to us unexpectedly. Who should we give it to? You know, like we did not at all think about the future. And in some ways that wasn't always wise. Although God's taking care of us. And so I can't really complain, you know, about that. But others are, you know, need to do a little less planning and a little less, you know, a little more spontaneous generosity, because you know they don't give unless it's in their budget, and might be that they need to listen a little more carefully to the Holy Spirit and give spontaneously at times. But I would say this, like, if you're really concerned about this issue, I think then you should be making plans for how you're going to adjust in the future. You know, there's more than one way to take care of to plan for retirement for our missionaries. You know, like, you know, one is raising a lot more support so they have resources when they retire. Another is that churches get serious about saying, hey, we're going to take care of our missionaries when they retire. You know, that is a possibility. You know, that's what they used to do is, hey, you know, you get old and your family takes care of you. And so I think if churches want to be serious about realizing, hey, there's a problem coming up, they're going to have to adjust some of their planning and looking at the culture and say the way the culture is leading us to do these things isn't going to work in the future. We need to think of another way, because I don't think the obligations of sending, of supporting, of caring, and caring for God's household, especially like spiritual workers who are doing spiritual work, that doesn't change simply because now we have less money.
Well, that's big. And that kind of leads us to maybe the second part of this conversation that we do need to get to. Because, yeah, my own household budget, that's, you know, something between me and the Lord that we have to work out. How generous can we or should we be as the Spirit leads and as we use wisdom and sound principles from Scripture of managing all these resources as stewards? But then there's this whole other consideration of the church has to hold the rope. So if one or two people in the church have to take their hands off the rope, that's fine. But the church as a whole needs to hold the rope. We can't drop that missionary down into the hole and fully let go of the harness. And so churches themselves need to be intentional to make sure that their overall mission budget and those whom they've committed to support, that they're not requiring the ox to be muzzled while treading out the grain, right? To use another biblical metaphor there. But you speak to some of these other trends that are happening in the culture, Scott, and that really gets at the first part of Dave's question, because again, he's reading a book that's not just about we're individually suffering right now financially because of inflation, as real of a factor that is. He's also thinking about the fact that just America as this sort of global superpower, if it's not already in full decline, I think morally we can argue it's in a free fall. But you could also argue that sort of the global industrial hegemonic influence of the U.S. has seen better days for sure. And whereas before you saw a lot more free trade, you saw a lot more free exchange between nations, and we called it globalism. Now with that power player really crumbling in a lot of different ways, you do see more skirmishes popping up in different parts of the world. I said to our producer here, Brian, not long before we started recording, it's possible that our kids and our grandkids, you know, maybe they can't just hop on a plane anytime they want and go do a missions trip to the Dominican Republic. Maybe things don't work quite that easily in the generations to come. We have to recognize that things were easy with air travel, with global travel in general, a lot because of the state of affairs that is maybe just fading away a little bit. And so how do we think through what should our meta missions strategy be in light of some of the trends that we're seeing? I'll tell you just one thing off the bat for me, and then I'll let you weigh in on this too, Scott. We talked about this before on the show. It's no longer from the West to the rest. Mm-hmm. As much as the U.S. and Western countries should send missionaries, and that's a good and proper thing to do, every nation where there is a healthy, vibrant church is a and can be a sending nation now, too. It can be from everywhere to everywhere. And I think a lot of people in the missions community know that. I think that needs, though, to filter down into our individual churches' mission strategies. And one thing that has really blessed our church, in fact, our missions committee just last night met with Pastor Stephen in India, who's been a guest on this show before. If you go back and listen to his conversation he had with us about what's happening in the Manipur state, our church just met with him to have a conversation again of what are your needs? How is the ministry going? I think that national partnerships, working with local believers directly, whether or not we have the luxury of sending our own person there and holding that very expensive rope, I think that's something we should do. But when that door closes, let's have a strategy of using national partnerships. Let's connect with ministries like ABWE's Live Global Ministry or others that are doing that type of important work. Because the Great Commission doesn't stop just because America has fallen on hard economic times for one reason or another. So that's one strategy shift. Scott, what else do you think we need to think about there in light of the global trend? If you're listening to the Missions Podcast, you probably already believe in missions. You believe that God is working for His glory in Christ among the nations, and that we have a role to play in that important and unfolding task. But maybe you just haven't quite found that role yet. Maybe you thought you were called, but maybe you're not sure now. Or maybe you've been a sender for a long time, but you're starting to get uncomfortable. Maybe like the Lord is leading you to do more. Well, ABWE's 24-hour demo is for you. Visit a global missions agency with missionaries in more than 80 nations. meet a host of veteran missionaries, and worship and pray and break bread with others who are just like you, in your shoes. Leave ready to take action with your next step of obedience identified so that you can do it. Now, this demo event happens multiple times year-round, so you can find the next event and register now at demo.abwe.org and use the promo code PODCAST, that's promo code PODCAST in all caps, to receive a discount on your registration fee. This could be the thing that you're waiting and praying for. Again, visit demo.abwe.org and use promo code PODCAST to register now and come to an event that could unlock your next step in obeying the Great Commission.
I see less cooperation, you know, right now than we've had in the past. And maybe that's just, you know, me paying too much attention to social media.
Cooperation between churches, between agencies, churches, missionaries.
Yeah. Okay. Between churches mostly. You know, I think some of our fat cat situations allow us to be, you know, super, you know, we're really straining at gnats in some areas, I think. And that's just my opinion, obviously, but I think cooperation becomes really important when you have less. You know, I think in communities where there's a lot of poverty, you see, if they're going to survive, you see communities really coming together and figuring out how to support one another. And I think that is, been in the past a really beautiful thing in missions, you know, where you have lots of individuals on lots of churches that say, hey, let's figure out how to work together to advance the cause of Christ. So I think that is something that I would love to see more of us doing, is talking about the needs and really, you know, figuring out ways to work together to see that accomplished. I mean, I think that's partly, you know, what drives you and I of talking about theology and good theology and missions, because there's going to be good partnership. There has to be good agreement about what is the mission itself and how do we go about doing that in a way that honors the Lord and is faithful to the word of God. You know, kind of, you know, it's almost like we need to get back to missions by the book. I don't know.
Someone should write a book on that. You should
give a little plug for your new book, Alex. You haven't done that yet, but
I haven't,
you know. But anyway, you know, I think that becomes really important, you know, that we work together, but we work together toward what end, you know, toward the most essential things that we could be doing on the field.
Well, can I comment on something you shared there, Scott? I mean, yeah, you know, those of you who listened to the show for a while, you know that when we talk about missions and missionaries, we have kind of a high bar for what is missions, that maybe others in the Christian community, evangelicals, even maybe don't share. So we're talking mostly, not exclusively, but mostly about long-term language learning, culture acquiring, missionary church planting teams whose goal it is to preach the gospel, make disciples, gather them into healthy local churches that practice the ordinary means of grace, preaching the word, the ordinances, and then are training up local qualified officers, elders, deacons, to carry the torch of mission forward and multiply and continue to share the gospel throughout their communities and plant more churches with that same DNA of mission. That's what we're talking about, which kind of raises this other consideration, maybe a strategic shift for some, and it'll be an easier shift for some than others, but with resources dwindling and maybe less generosity in a lot of our sending churches, maybe the shift just should be not to doing no missions or being less generous, but doing fewer missionaries, fewer mission projects, but better. So maybe this is a time to trim bloat. Maybe there is someone that your church is supporting as a missionary who, let's just face it, they're there out of an obligation, but everyone knows that person squandering resources, not being faithful. Maybe you're thinking of someone. I mean, maybe prayerfully, you need to sort of let that person know, hey, we need to focus these resources elsewhere. I think quality over quantity. Because now's a great time to talk about the quality of missionaries that we're supporting. We've got coming up here later this month, it'll probably be after this recording comes out, but we've got Missionary Conference coming up, led by Radius and some other groups that we're friends with down in Jacksonville. By the way, Scott, you and I Well, we're going to be there. I guess we were there. I don't know when this comes out.
We'll see if we're there or not with the storm that's coming.
We'll see what happens with Hurricane Milton coming. But point being, this is a conference that's all about the quality of missionary activity that we're engaged in. I think we can do maybe less, but more in another sense of that there. Scott, we do need to kind of wrap this up, but you know, heading into the overtime, you've raised a few points. You're afraid of fear mongering, and maybe that's rightly a concern. I think that exists out there. We also can't be naive, and really, it raises this question of what should our posture be right now? Should we be fundamentally optimists? Are we pessimists? Are we realists? That has big theological implications. It has big missionary implications. Just looking at the culture and just trying to figure out what is actually the moment that we're in. So I want to unpack that with you in the overtime. Scott, do you have a 30-second last word before we switch to that bonus segment for our subscribers?
Yeah, if you're a planner, then plan your generosity. You know, like don't see the signs of saying, hey, you know, things are heading in a bad way and retreat from giving. I mean, maybe you want to be more judicious in your giving. Maybe you want to hold the missionaries you're supporting and, you know, more accountable. But don't shy away from that. And remember, you know, that's, you know, divinely given command, you know, that God's going to give us everything that we need to do the good that he calls us to do. And so I don't think we need to be afraid of that. But we do need to be probably more strategic. Whenever trials come, God does something really cool and unusual. And I think that the church should be, I'm kind of tipping my hand. I'm optimistic. I'm not pessimistic about what God's doing. So,
and I'm optimistic in another way. I also think that, coming from a slightly different perspective, but not by much, if we are afraid to ask questions about, maybe I do need to plan better. Maybe I need to rethink this. We shouldn't be afraid to use biblical wisdom in those ways, because God's generosity doesn't depend on your recklessness. You can have those hard conversations. You can look at the budget, and the Lord will still provide for his people, and he wants us to be generous and joyful. The Lord loves a cheerful giver, and he gives us wisdom. And those two things aren't in contradiction to each other, so we shouldn't pit them against each other. You know, as though they're opposites. They're not really opposites, because wisdom and generosity, those are all graces of the Spirit, right? And so we ought to find obedience, generosity, joy, joyfulness in giving. Those all come together. So let's talk about the fundamental issue. Are we optimistic or not? We'll do that in the overtime segment. Thank you for joining us on the Missions Podcast. To learn more about ABWE, go to abwe.org. Maybe you and your church can figure out how to take the right next step for you in Great Commission engagement. You can also go to missionspodcast.com/premium to join us for this bonus conversation. Brian, our producer, will join us as well, and we'll get into all of it. And before you go, if you have any questions or suggestions for what we should address in the future, you can email us, alex@missionspodcast.com or scott@missionspodcast.com. We love to hear from you. Again, this note for today's episode came from one of our loyal listeners and friends. And so what if your note was the basis of our next conversation? Reach out to us. We would love to chat with you. And until our next conversation, by the way, Scott, notice I didn't plug my book. So you'll just have to wait on bated breath to hear more next about time. That. Until our next conversation, go make disciples of all nations.